Hi, Ken here. In nearly all of our podcasts, you hear students asking questions and their interaction with me. Many listeners find these exchanges illuminating because what is being asked is often exactly what is on their minds. If you find these conversations helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand our website. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, the nuts and bolts of meditation, sitting, and life.
So the guidelines. Use one practice to do everything. Now, in Tibetan, you have the words Tun and Tun Tham. Tun refers to a session of formal meditation or formal practice, where you sit down and you go through refuge and lineage prayer and refuge and bodhicitta, and sit for a period of time doing whatever practice, and then conclude, and then you get up. And Tun Tham refers to the period in between your periods of meditation. So the language is heavily biased towards meditation practices. The idea, when you read this, is you're not really living unless you're meditating. And this is a very unfortunate impression, because it's given rise to an awful lot of tension in many people's lives between their practice and their daily life. And they feel, well, I should be practicing more, and I should be taking more time for retreat, and an unhealthy tension develops between the activities of life and one's practice. The way I've come to approach practice myself is that practice is really about cultivating and exercising attention. In formal meditation sessions, one is cultivating and exercising attention unmixed with other activities. You're just sitting there. In one's life, one's cultivating and exercising attention mixed with activities. And that's the only difference. One is unmixed with activity, and one is mixed with activity. And if one approaches one's life this way, then there's no tension, because one's life becomes an ongoing work of cultivating and exercising attention. And one of the more popular reminders that I give students is, once you step on this path, there are no vacations. So even when you go on vacation, you are cultivating and exercising attention. And Rinpoche used to say that the law of the land, or the law of the king, is like a golden yoke, beautiful to put on, and it grows heavier and heavier. Pardon? The law of the king, the law of the land, is like a golden yoke, beautiful, but you put it on and it grows heavier and heavier. Whereas the law of the Dharma is like a silk scarf. You put it on, first it's a little bit tight, but as you go about your day, it becomes looser and looser. When you approach your life as the purpose and the intention in your life is to cultivate and exercise attention in everything, at first it's like, oh my God. But you begin to appreciate after a while that things get screwed up when you're not exercising and cultivating and exercising attention. And as long as you're exercising and cultivating attention, then even when very difficult situations arise, can happen in life, one is able to negotiate them. And the real problems arise when you're not. So one's life becomes more and more, or that this practice becomes more and more, I won't say comfortable, but takes a meaning in its own right. The more you work with it, it's not an onerous burden, which is how it may feel at the beginning. So, use one practice to do everything. The one practice is mind training. Training your mind in emptiness and compassion. So when you're sitting doing formal meditation, everything's like a dream. No one home. Rest. And in that space, one practices taking and sending, which is the expression of compassion. So compassion and emptiness are joined together. And going about the day, for instance, we have the work activity. Then, as you're doing the work, or as you're going for a walk in the afternoon, or conversing with a friend, or writing notes, whatever, it's just experience. There's nothing to it. And in that open space, one is doing what you are doing, what you need to do in order to express your intention to wake up and be present so that you can help other beings wake up and be present. In Bodhicharyavatara, Shanti Deva describes what it's like to discover bodhicitta, or awakening mind, within oneself. Now, awakening mind is described as having these two aspects, the awakening to what is ultimately true, awakening to what is apparently true, emptiness, compassion. But really, they're not two different things. It's just a pedagogical device. One discovers that there's nothing to you, and compassion can manifest, and that intention to open and bring awakening into one's whole world, which means into everybody around one, it's just there, and it's not personal, it's just an expression of what one is. And it goes on for a whole chapter describing how wonderful it is to discover this. It's really very beautiful poetry. And basically, this line is living out of that kind of appreciation. You just live it. And the amazing thing is that once you uncover this in yourself, and it's there in every one of us, then everything you do works for the welfare of others. When you're eating, you're nourishing your own body so that you can practice and continue to cultivate and exercise attention and bring this seed or potential to its fullest realization. When you sleep, you're resting and resting the body and resting the mind so that you can continue that work. When you're earning money, it's for the same reason. Everything, it becomes informed by this. So it really is like this wish-fulfilling jewel that Shantideva describes.
This question was submitted by Jim in Holland, Michigan. I'm struggling to find the balance of importance between the everyday concerns of daily life and a larger detached perspective. Giving too much importance, i.e. attachment, to daily or worldly problems, everything from economic worries to wars, causes suffering, but living in a completely detached state makes it difficult to function in the realities of this life. The place where I should be residing, is it somewhere in the middle? How do I know if I'm there?
Open to the whole of your life, every facet of it. And everything will be there, as you say, from economic worries to wars, all the day-to-day concerns, you know, what am I going to eat for dinner tonight, to where am I going to live, or what am I going to do with my life, to all of the, quotation marks, big matters like conflict and war and disturbances in different parts of the world and so forth. What we actually do in any given situation is determined by our relationship to it. For some people, political, economic issues touch them in a way that they work at them either through their work or through political action. For other people, they are not moved by that. And they focus their attention on the important relationships in their lives and so forth. There isn't any one right way. By opening to the wholeness of your life, the whole of your life, opening to everything, you will, and I want to emphasize not thinking about it, but just opening to it. In that opening, you will sense where there is imbalance, and you will sense where there are places where you can do something and be effective, and you'll sense where there are places where you aren't able to do anything or aren't able to be effective. And that's going to determine what you actually do in given circumstances. So I encourage you to bring your attention to this, but not through thinking about it, through opening to the experience and feeling, opening to what your life actually consists of.
This is Art from Los Angeles. Prior to starting to practice, I didn't realize how emotionally disconnected I was from life. And part of what my practice has done over the past few years is allow me to open up to experiencing life in both all of its pleasures and a lot of its pain and suffering. And I found it to be just, perhaps in some ways, really intoxicating. I'm taking it all in, and life is, in both its riches and downturns, is really exciting. And I want to engage fully in it. And yet sometimes in class, I remember you were once talking about what would you do if you knew you only had a year to live or a month to live, and there were all these thoughts coming through my head about stuff I would do, and someone then said, well, from what little I know of the bardo, I'd sit down and practice dying. And, you know, some of what we've been reading in the Jewel Ornament talks about the importance of, you know, tossing aside, you know, the everyday matters of this life and focusing on practice and making that your life's work. Personally, I'm kind of in a unique point in my life where if I truly wanted to, I could run off to a monastery and devote my life to practice. or I could go down the other fork in the road and engage life fully. There is a part of me that realizes that's probably a false choice. But the desire to do one or the other, I feel myself pulled strongly in both directions at times. Can you help me sort of come to terms with this false choice?
Well, you're making the assumption it's a false choice. I'm not going to start there.
Okay.
When you engage life in its, all its richness, pleasure, and pain, are you always present?
No.
That's the criterion. As you say, we are often find ourselves, for various reasons, you know, not experiencing life fully. I think it's very good that through your exposure to practice, or practice experience, you see that there are dimensions to life and aspects of life that you can now experience much more completely. That's great. Whenever we're not present, you know, whenever we're in the story, whenever we're in our projections, we're not experiencing life fully. And so it's a case of stepping out of those. And that's what practice is for, is to build up sufficient level of attention, sufficient momentum in our efforts, that we spend more and more of our life actually present in the experience of life, not getting lost, not falling into confusion. So that's why there's the emphasis on practice, because it's actually quite hard to be present all the time. There's those who would say, it's not possible. We're constantly falling out and coming back. But we spend more and more of our time experiencing things as they are rather than some story in our heads. And how far one goes down that road, how one goes down that road, is a matter of individual choice. Some people have devoted their lives to it in the sense of taking monastic ordination and living as monks and nuns, basically in order to simplify their lives so that they have much, much less to think about and they can engage that effort very, very completely. Other people, that isn't a viable path for them, for because of temperament, because of circumstances in their lives, responsibilities, all kinds of reasons. And so they make efforts in, you know, practicing on a daily basis, meditation, making efforts during the day to be more and more present. I don't think it's a case of either or. There have been great teachers, great practitioners in both ways. So I don't think there's a monopoly of on one or the other. But the emphasis on practice is precisely so that we can experience life fully, and that's why I don't see it. It's not so much a false choice that you're coming from, but more perhaps not appreciating what practice is actually about. That makes sense?
Yes, it's reminding me of something I thought I heard you say in class a couple of weeks ago about, I forget who you were referencing, but they said it's the responsibilities of monks and nuns to become enlightened, and it's the responsibility of lay people to
function properly.
Right.
This is something from Sung Sin Im, the Korean Zen teacher. Yeah, I've always liked that. And of course he turns around at the end and says, mind you, the purpose of becoming enlightened is so that you can function properly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we can't function properly in our lives if we're living in a story. We have to be in what actually is, and that's where it comes back to presence. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Greta from Los Angeles. My question is very similar in the sense that it's about attention. And it is, how can we be more attentive to our immediate surroundings? Not just our unconscious thoughts that come, but our conscious thinking of the future and the past and not the current surroundings.
Sorry, could you say that again?
Yes, how can we be more attentive to the immediate surroundings around us?
What prevents you?
I think the habit of worrying about the future, thinking about the past, as well as the thoughts that we just previously talked about that come and go in our mind.
Okay. So you know how to do it?
By concentrating?
No, you know that what prevents you from doing it.
Right. The habits of thinking of the future and the past.
Mm-hmm. So it could, one might say, you could rephrase the question as, how do I stop thinking about the future or stop thinking about the past,
yes,
and being always caught up in that? Well, there are many ways that we could approach this. The first thing is, it's a matter of training. It's not something that we can just decide or do something and it stops happening. These are deeply ingrained patterns, and they serve useful functions. And so we're going to have to invest a similar amount of time in training ourselves, essentially, to experience our lives in a different way. And that is the purpose of meditation practice, essentially. It's a way of practicing experiencing life in a different way, in a way that is free from being caught up in the conceptual processes. So the first thing, and I think almost, there may be a few people who don't need to do this, but there are very, very few, is to establish a regular meditation practice. What the actual technique is probably not so important. The big thing is that it be consistent. So whether it's Zen or Vipassana or other Theravadin practices or various practices from the Tibetan tradition or any of the other traditions of Buddhism, that's not a big deal. The important thing is that one is doing this every day. From my own experience, one has to be doing it at least half an hour every day. A bit more than that is better, but less than half an hour. If you're meditating less than half an hour, say around 20 minutes or so, meditation works primarily as a relaxation method and a stress management method. And it's very helpful that way. But when you start doing it about half an hour or so, then it starts to build a capacity and attention. And what happens is that you're practicing letting go of thoughts one after the other, because you're sitting and you rest with the breath, and thought about dinner yesterday comes up, and you go, oh, that's right, okay. And you come back to the breath. And then, oh, I've got to do that project for tomorrow, and I need that information, I need to do this, and oh, right, okay. And then you start remembering something that happened in your high school, and come back to the breath. And then something, you know, and it's one thing after another. But you just keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back to, and I'm using the example of resting with the breath here. What one is practicing is letting go of thinking. And as you do that over and over again, you begin to let go of thinking. And it actually starts to happen in our lives long before we're actually aware that it's happening in our lives. Most people, it's usually started to happen in their lives within about a month of starting a meditation practice. But they generally don't notice it. All they notice is that conversations go a little more smoothly. And their interaction with people is a little smoother. What's actually happening is that when somebody says something, they aren't getting caught up with all the things that just the thinking going on. They're actually listening to what the other person is saying. So things do go smoother because they're listening and so forth. Now, there are other practices where you can sit and just open to one's immediate surroundings. For instance, right here, right now, we could sit and just experience everything in our visual field. All at once. And we'll find that our attention is caught by an object. And whenever we notice that, we just expand from that object back out to the whole visual field. So it's a constantly expanding to the whole visual field over and over again. Now, when you do that, what do you experience?
Well, my mind tends to wander back to one particular item, and then I have to tell it to expand again.
Right.
But this is the idea, to be more attentive in every day, and not just meditating, but I see how that could practice your thinking, which would apply to being in the daily world.
And the other thing you can do is, and this is from Thich Nhat Hanh, when you're walking somewhere, put your attention in the walking and the experience of walking, rather than on what you're going to do when you get there. And he has the stoplight meditation. It's very good. It avoids, you will never get a ticket. Because whenever you come to a stop sign, you stop the car and you take a breath. And you experience being at the stop sign. You're never going to get a ticket after that, if you take up that practice. So what you say is quite right. It's about bringing attention or experiencing inattention everything that we do. And we start just building that capacity a bit here, a bit there, and supported by a consistent meditation practice. That's how it's done. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.